A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 11th March 2021, Thursday class. Just relax body and mind, maintain some form of attention, and we will proceed with the half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So we will off the lights, then you can start your meditation. Always remember, this awareness-based meditation is to develop awareness within. The awareness nature within is without thought. So to develop this awareness within, we need to have sati. We need to be completely silent. So to be completely silent and without thought is not easy. The Buddha already explained, without the spiritual faculty developed, it is impossible for you to have the ability to be in the state of awareness, which is the silent mind, to develop the meditation. So in order to train, we need to develop some form of understanding. The understanding is, without the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance are there. Your mind will create sankhara activity. This mental hindrance hinders you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness for you to realize your true mind, your silent mind. Your true mind is actually your awareness nature, the unconditioned. It's just aware, that's it, finish. And that one, it cannot come out and live life. That's why it's not like the mundane mind. Whereas the mundane mind is the byproduct of the true mind. From the awareness nature, it creates mundane thinking. It creates mundane aggregates. That's why to develop the awareness-based meditation is for us to stabilize this awareness nature, to allow us to see all this so that we understand that each and every one of us has two minds. One is the true mind before the arising of thought, before the arising of the aggregate of mind, before the stirring, before the reaction, before the memory. So the fastest way to develop it is to just apply the four support for awareness-based meditation. That's why the first thing you must develop is relaxation, ability to relax completely, both body and mind. Relax means don't do anything, let things be and silent. Whatever arise, let it arise, because you have not stabilized your mental faculty, spiritual faculty, unless you have developed and trained them. You are not able to have the spiritual faculty to support your meditation. So most people will have sankhara activity, but don't worry, if you don't resist, don't fight, don't try to do anything, don't create any more thinking, then all this sankhara activity will slow down until it completely still. So when you relax and maintain awareness, you don't think. When you don't think, whatever arises, you let it arise, because you don't feed the thinking with any more thought energy. You don't try to like do something. There is no meditator, which is the thought that try to meditate through verbalization, through dialogue. So when you start to verbalize chatter and dialogue inside, that's how sankhara come to be. Your mundane mind, your thinking mind become active. That's why you cannot meditate. Even when you know, who know? The thought know. When you try to do something, who do? The thought do. So no point. There is not awareness-based meditation. There is thought-based meditation. So what you should do is relax completely, body and mind, and let whatever arise settle down on its own naturally. You just a silent, choiceless awareness. You without choice, without trying to do anything, you just maintain awareness. Just be aware. Whatever arise, aware. Contact between senses and the consciousness trigger on the respective so-called consciousness or whatever, then how your mind input the content, just aware, finish. Don't allow it to distract you. Don't allow it to create thinking in you. Don't allow it to give meaning so that you will be entangled with whatever that arises. Just like you are dead. A dead person cannot have reaction, cannot do anything. You assume you are dead. So whatever that stimulate from the senses or the mundane mind, just let it be as if you are dead. If you do that, you just aware, finish, without even verbalization. Then if you are patient enough, your mind will settle down and become very quiet. You must be patient to wait till the shift in consciousness happens. When the mundane thinking settle down, you can be aware of it. Then later on, when it completely become quiet and still, that is the moment you will experience the silence within. We call it the shift of consciousness from an agitated, reactive type of sankhara environment. It has slowed down and ceased. When it ceases, means the mind returns to its original state of stillness. The true mind is the original mind before the stirring, before the thinking, before the mundane arising. So realize that that is your true mind, that is your awareness nature. Stay there for as long as you can. Stabilize the awareness. When your awareness stabilizes, you will become more and more heedful, more and more aware, less and less sankhara. Then that silence, the awareness, can see many things, can understand many things, can give rise to wisdom, can allow you to insight into the normal, awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So all this is meditation. This is the real awareness-based meditation. So I will let you meditate on your own. So I will start the alarm. I will allow 30 minutes. You will meditate on your own for the next 30 minutes. Then when the 30 minutes is up, the alarm will trigger off. Then I will ring the bell 3 times. Upon hearing the bell, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed. So hopefully with this instruction, you all can develop the understanding that every time you meditate, you follow this instruction. Then for those who are familiar with your old way of training your mind using method, technique, or skillful means, or chanting, or dynamic meditation, you can use it as long as it suits you. It's up to you. Even anapanasati, you can use it. The rising and the falling, you can use it. But silence your mind and develop the sati or awareness, the mindfulness. Don't go and think. Don't go and do things. Just let the mind develop the sati. Then just stabilize it. Finally, you will reach the same state, the mind become very quiet and just peaceful. It's just aware without thought, so it's peaceful. Then even anapanasati, initially the awareness is specific phenomenal awareness of the breathing, the in and the out breath. Then this one will transform. From the initial long breath, you become very calm, very still. Then you experience pity. Then from pity, you continue to relax and silent. It develops into sukhang. Sukhang is blissfulness of mind, a more refined state of pity. Then when it reaches sukhang, there is this blissful state, very blissful. Then you continue to relax and maintain awareness. Then the breathing becomes slower and slower and slower until the subtle breathing, until there is no more breathing, until you can hardly perceive the movement of the breath. Means the breath has actually become very subtle. Then it develops internal subtle breathing. Don't worry. When you reach that state, it's a sign of good progress. Means your awareness, your sati has reached a refinement which is so still, so silent, so relaxed and aware. So this is what your true mind is. When you reach that state, you will realize pasati. Pasati is an enlightenment factor. So pasati is the silent mind, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. It is just that silent away, finish. Then you stay there. Stay there, even at the tip of the nostril or whatever, wherever the nostril is, you stay there, like no movement, stay there. Then after a while, not long, maybe 10, 20 minutes, if you do it very often, over a period of time, this awareness of that still mind will stabilize. When it stabilizes, it means the mind has entered sati, and your mind has become more aware. That stability of awareness has stabilized. So when the mind enters sati, everything you do is in sati. You are aware, very sensitive that time. Whatever slightest movement is like magnified. Then every physical movement is like slow motion, like continuous awareness. Then later on, when you come out of the meditation, you can maintain that state of awareness when the mind has entered sati. Then you realize everything you become aware of is in sati. Like when you see something within the seeing consciousness, specific phenomenal awareness will arise. Means whatever you see is just the awareness of that specific phenomenon. Then whatever you hear is specific phenomenal hearing awareness. Similarly, smell, taste, tactile, and thought process. You can see them. It is like everything appear in slow motion for you to see. Like there is a flow, continuous awareness flow. When you can do that, my nature will rejoice. Means your mind has entered sati. You will be able to meditate very well after that. After that, you will understand what the silent mind is, what the true mind is. Then on your own, you will develop awareness of many things. Then you will understand the teaching naturally. Then whatever you hear, if it's the truth, you will understand. So this is the power of mindfulness, the beauty of sati. Awareness nature within, you can really, really develop it. You will progress very fast. So initially, just maintain the faith, then be sincere, just do, persevere. It will come. If you have the faith, if you are sincere, if you just do, persevere, the sati will come. The shift of consciousness will come. Your mind state will transform. That's how you start. Then when that thing happens, you will progress very fast. So don't worry about what people say or method, technique. Forget about it. The most important thing about meditation is to develop sati, stabilizing, and realize your true mind. From your true mind, you start. Your true mind is a silent mind without thought. That's why Hui Ling say the first hallmark of real awareness-based meditation is wu nian, without thought. You have to start from the point of zero thought. Just aware. Okay, I will let you meditate on your own. Eh? Turn to page 141. Eh? Oh, sorry, 140. Okay, we are on a new subheading. Eh? They uphold the pure precepts of all Buddhas, even at the cost of their life. They never cause harm. So this is a very unique feature of a great Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva, they walk the path of Buddhahood to realize Sammasambuddha. They have this quality, which is very unique. They uphold the pure precepts of all Buddhas. Even at the cost of their life, they never cause harm. This one is not easy. Like when people attack you, yeah? Or you are at the mercy of others to be killed, or life-threatening type of situation. But they will still know how to handle the situation. They will not retaliate or do things that will cause harm to others. Just to them is they will maintain the pure precepts. Their pure precepts are very pure. That's why they are very different from normal human beings. The normal human being cannot understand how the Sammasambuddha or the great beings or even Bodhisattva live life. Sometimes they can just sacrifice and give up their life just because of something which they feel there is condition for them to do so. So when it comes to perfection of parami, these are the things that they have. And they know if the situation warrants, they will do it. So during the time of the Buddha, I think there were many Jataka stories which were shared by the Buddha. One of them was, he was still a Bodhisattva at that time. Then he saw an injured tigress, the mother tiger, with many cubs down there. But just because the Bodhisattva knew the injured tigers couldn't go and look for food or hunt for food to feed the cow. And he was injured. She was injured. So there was no way he can get food. Then that time the Bodhisattva was around and he knew, he sensed what happened. Then there must be some form of past karmic affinity or connection. He just willing to sacrifice his human form, his life. He just jumped down and let the tigress have a proper feast to heal herself and to provide for the cubs and all those things. But these are not things that normal people can do, because they have the understanding that the form doesn't belong to them. It makes up of element, goes away of nature. So a lot of understanding has to be there for certain beings to have that understanding, to take that type of cultivation. Then there are many other incidents, yeah, where at the risk of their life, they never cause harm or kill. Sometimes it could be war or threatening type of situation, but they were just accord and flow, then do their best. Then sometimes at the risk of protecting the herds that they were protecting, they willing to sacrifice their life. They go forth and surrender themselves. He said, do not harm my people or those herds that were following them. There were many lives during the Jataka story of the Bodhisattva. I think he was the leader of the deer at that time. Then there were some incident to a certain type of animals. He always like become their leaders. So there were many incidents where they willing to sacrifice and give up, even at the cost of their lives. So these are not normal things that normal people can do. But please, don't just because you hear this, you say, wow, you want to be like the Buddha. There is no way you can do it. Understand? It's different. You don't have that perfection, that cultivation. You don't know what this thing is. So you have to go through life. You have to develop the understanding. So do not be foolish. You think by doing that you can also become the Sammasambuddha one day. No. Because when you do all this cultivation, perfection, it's the understanding that brings forth the condition for such thing to manifest. Otherwise it can't. Then you cannot really do it. Because the understanding behind is very deep and very profound. So anyway, we read on, we see what the author has to share. Spiritual cultivation takes time. This one is very, very true. That's why you have to be very patient. It doesn't mean that it takes eons and eons and eons like the Bodhisattva way. That one is different. That one is maybe for those who understand what this Bodhisattva way is all about. It definitely involves eons and eons and eons of birth and death, lifespan. But when we talk about spiritual cultivation, take time means it's not like what people think overnight, yeah, you become enlightened. Then after that, no need to do anything really. It's not that way. Because the whole cultivation is unending. Spiritual cultivation is unending. But there will be moments of awakening, moments of enlightenment. It keeps on happening all the way. But all this awakening and so-called enlightening moments, it doesn't mean that immediately after that you become Sammasambuddha. No such thing. In fact, the first glimpse of Nibbana is just the beginning. You can transform and become a Sotapanna. But there are so much more for you to learn, to develop the understanding, even after you become Arahant. Of course, there's no more rebirth. The birth and death of the segmented body through normal law of karma no longer exists. That's why to the Theravada tradition or practitioner, their aim is to realize arahantship so that they don't have to come back to the conditioned world to suffer. But they don't have the understanding of what happened. Actually, is nobody there. There is he no you, he no me. The arahant is just the form and mind that has the wisdom connected. That's why he is no longer deluded. So he doesn't suffer anymore. And because of that, there is no avijja, No avidya means last thought moment before he died. He cannot have that type of condition rebirth like normal human being born of ignorance. Avidya paccaya sankhara, the last thought moment through delusion, they take birth. No more. That's why arahant sees. Sees means the mind realizes nibbana, no longer arising. Means after that last thought moment, it ceases. There is just a condition, a rebirth consciousness. So there is no karmic force, continuation of karmic force. But it doesn't mean you cannot come back. You must know how to come back. And then you can come back. That's why bodhisattva come back. Buddhas, they come back. Yeah, this is the conditioned world. You must know within the conditioned world for you to come back to this conditioned world to manifest like this life. My nature come with this form and mind. You call brother Theo as a human being. This is my vehicle. This is my tool. And my nature, because I go this way, when I come back, I don't need to go to that avijja paccaya sankhara type of rebirth consciousness. No. My nature has the vow, the bodhisattva vow. Then it has the understanding. Then the understanding and all the vows and aspiration that it has perfected and cultivated over the long period of cultivation. This is the one that gives rise to understanding for this nature to come. And this nature can choose to come where it has all this understanding. Initially, as you walk on the bodhisattva way, you cannot choose because you don't have the understanding and the ability. But that vow, if you are very sincere, if you are committed, you have the faith, then you really take that vow. Then that vow take root. The bodhi mind planted, then it take root. Then what happened is, that life, before you become arahant, if it take root, even as a sainthood, you can still come back. You can still come back. Then that life, just before you become the arahant, or after you become arahant, you can make that vow and develop the ability and determine strongly to plant the seed of bodhi to go this way. Means you have proper guide, proper guidance. You have that type of kayamita that has the understanding. They can guide you, they can train you, they can teach you how to do. Then if you seriously determine, sincerely with the faith, then it can happen. Then when it happens, when you pass away, well, you already are hung, there is no more rebirth. But that vow will bring forth the causes and conditions for this pure mind to arise. Where your first bodhisattva vow, you vow to save the limitless living being in the entire existential world. That vow is out of love and compassion. So because of that vow, it actually merged with the nature's law. The nature's law allowed that vow to manifest as what? As a pure mind. But that intent is very pure, out of love and compassion for the living being. They vow to liberate the limitless living being and take them all across. So that vow, which is a pure thought, a pure mind, at that one, take birth. That's why it's no more ignorant thought. So this pure mind, condition rebirth. What you need is a karmically conditioned form and mind. The form, karma will deliver. Understand? Like this physical body, this vehicle, the karma deliver. But the consciousness that go with this rebirth, you need to create it either through avijja. You die like a normal deluded being, then you take birth. That is the normal way. But the bodhisattva don't take birth this way because they have become arahant and beyond. They will never die like a deluded, ignorant living being. They die with this pure understanding. The mind just sees. We have no more delusion, no more avijja. It will not condition rebirth. So that one, the pure mind, come from their vow. So the conditioning and the timing initially is not up to you, because that being don't have that ability to choose to come. Choose to come means you choose your timing, you choose your condition, you choose your parent, you choose all those things. Like this line, my nature choose my parent, my nature choose the timing to come. Then when my nature arise, those that have affinity with me, they will also take birth because of affinity coming and whatever. Yeah. So like this life, or let's say during the time of Sakyamuni, okay? Just because you have affinity with Sakyamuni, or even some of his great disciples, you may, during that time, because you know who they are, and your faith is so strong, you determine that some of them, they already have affinity with them, because otherwise they cannot take birth when Sammasambuddha Sakyamuni arrives, or these people arrive. They have encountered before. It's just like the Jataka story, it was mentioned. The top 10 disciples of the Buddha, especially Sariputta, Wanggalana, Mahakasapa, even Anandadeo, they have been brothers, sisters, or parents and children for many, many, many lives, because they have been cultivating together. The only thing is Sakyamuni progressed faster through the wisdom way. That's why he became Sammasambuddha first. Then these are the people who are very close to him, but they have been cultivated with him for very long. Then some vow to become the chief disciple, like Moggallana and Sariputta. Then some vow to serve the Buddha in different way, like the wife. What is the name of the wife? Yasohara. Princess Yasohara. They have been married for many occasions. Then they vow to become the wife. Then the mother vow to give birth to Sammasambuddha. That's why a lot of living beings, they make this vow. So when they vow, when there is condition, it come true, it will fit in. Even like Sujata, he vowed to offer the milk rice to the potential Sammasambuddha. The last offering just before they become Sammasambuddha. That's why Sujata get to perform the offering of milk rice. And Sakyamuni after that, underneath the Bodhi tree that night, he became connected and realized Sammasambuddha. So all this explain why a lot of people fail to understand how come Sakyamuni Buddha is a Buddha so wise. He need to strive for 6 years long after he renounced the world and leave the palace long, to cultivate on his own. Whereas some of his disciples within 1 week, 2 weeks, straight away arahant. Why he take 6 years? It's not to say he is not as smart or as wise. It's because there are people who make this type of vow. You have to allow Sujata to make the offering, then only it can happen, because their pure wish and vow are so sincere that it has merged into nature's law. And their nature, like Sakyamuni, if you are very sincere, they will agree. They will consent to your offering. This one, unless you are this cultivator with a great being, you cannot understand. Because when people have the affinity and the condition, and they are so sincere and so true to themselves and so pure, when they make their request, all these great beings, they know, and they will have the ability to manifest what that person sincerely wish for. The other example is Dipankara Buddha. Dipankara Buddha. Do you know who is Dipankara Buddha? Long before Sakyamuni, become the cultivator to go this way. So Dipankara Buddha, when he arrives that time, actually Sakyamuni Buddha has the ability to become Arahant already, that line. He has actually walked this way for quite long. Then he couldn't get a prediction. Yeah, if you go the way of the Bodhisattva, you cultivate this Bodhisattva way, before you get the prediction from Sammasambuddha, you are not sure the final result of Sammasambuddha is not confirmed. So you need to get confirmation from Sammasambuddha. So that line, Sakyamuni Buddha to be, managed to get confirmation from Dipankara Buddha. You know what he did? That line, it was in the Jataka story, I think. The Chronicles of the Buddha. You read them. It seems during the time of Dipankara, he together with his reticule of disciples, they were walking through certain road to that village. But Sakyamuni to be that time as a Bodhisattva, he has the ability to use his psychic ability. He actually developed psychic and also understanding. Then he saw there was a pool, a pond of water. Not much. I think his whole body length can cover. So what he did was, he actually can use his psychic to clear that thing and all. He didn't. He lie down and let the Buddha and the disciple walk without getting wet. Yeah. Then Dipankara Buddha knew what he want. After they crossed, Dipankara Buddha turned to him. He said, "Your wish to get a prediction can be confirmed now." Then Dipankara surveyed and check him up. Then realized he has the parami already. Then he told him the prediction. He said, "After how many world cycles from now, you will become a Sammasambuddha. You will be born in a Sakyan family." Yeah. Means that 2,600 years ago, you will have the name of Gautama, Siddhartha Gautama. Yeah. But Sakyamuni is their Sakya clan. Clan. Is it clan? C-L-A-N. Yeah? You call clan. Clan. Clan or clan? Clan. Means their race, something like that. Sakya race. So Sakya is the race. Has a Muni. A Muni is a Sammasambuddha. So that's why it becomes Sakya Muni. So people cannot understand. I thought he was Siddhartha Gautama. But his name was Gautama. I think the family name was... Oh, sorry, his name was Siddhartha. The family name was Gautama. So, Siddhartha Gautama. Then the clan was Sakya. So that's why his predicted name is Sakyamuni. That's how it comes. So through all this Jataka story, you can also more or less understand. But if you are not a grieving, if you don't go this way, you cannot understand how come this is possible. What is all this thing? You cannot understand. So sometimes the aspiration you make during cultivation is very important. When you have the faith, when you understand what it is, you must determine strongly. Like this life, I teach you, this is the best window. That's like the Bodhisattva way. You must determine strongly, plant the seed of Bodhi and vow to go this way. Then vow to have all the right views that I mentioned down there. Then develop the ability to create affinity with great beings. Then evoke power of merits for causes and conditions to always meet up with all these great beings. Then whenever you meet up with all these great beings, you seek their blessing protection and guidance. So blessing and protection is for the physical body, the form and mind that come. So guidance is the teaching that you need from them. So blessing and protection is for the form and mind. We are this form and mind need blessings, need protection. But that nature don't need blessing, don't need protection. That one never die. That is the eternal nature. So when you seek blessing, protection and guidance, you must understand what is it for. Like this life, if I have not had the blessing, protection and guidance of Kuan Yin, my physical form would have died 3 times. It will not be here sharing and teaching. But because of Kuan Yin's blessing and protection, this form and mind survive. So it's not easy. In fact, this form and mind, when you come, is very fragile. This one, very easy to get destroyed. Whereas the understanding, nobody can take away from you. The wisdom part, the cultivation and all that. But the form and mind still need protection and guidance. Of course, guidance you need for that nature's understanding. Blessing and protection. That's why these two are very important. So when you have all this understanding, then you can really determine, cultivate and go this way. What you need to do is to have the condition to develop the understanding and become dead serious. Then develop the faith. Then make your vow, make your aspiration. Plant the Bodhi mind, the seed of Bodhi strongly. The first stage of Bodhi is to make that vow, to plant that seed of Bodhi sincerely, with faith and diligently pursue to go this way. When that is done, your future is like more or less set and guaranteed. But once you have this, following the yellow card, you don't have to worry about how you die. Even before you have realized arahantship or whatever, even as a form and mind, before even you gain the same way or what, you can take this vow. Then when the condition comes, even if you die through normal avijja, you take rebirth, this vow, this Bodhi mind, deva nature, that whenever you take birth, because inside the vow, you vow to have this right view and this understanding whenever you arise, whether you choose to come or you have to come. Have to come is law of karma design. You don't have a choice. Even under those circumstances, this Bodhi mind will nurture. Then somehow you will understand this teaching. Whether got Sammasambuddha or don't have Sammasambuddha, got Sasana or no Sasana, this teaching is there. And you will know how to recognize that. Because you have taken that vow. You have determined strongly, sincerely. Then especially this life you cultivate really seriously, then all this understanding you reflect, contemplate until they become very clear. Then you determine that this understanding you must have whenever you arise. That's how it can happen. My nature went through, that's why I know. That's why this life, when my nature come, I realized when I was young, I already knew I was different. There are a lot of things I learned different. I do think opposite the convention. Opposite of what society do. A lot of things opposite. Not to say I want to be opposite. But I realize the truth is always the opposite of what the mundane people think. Whatever is logical to the mundane people is never the truth. And the truth is always the opposite. That's why the three universal characteristics are anicjang, dukkang, anatta. To us, life is like, where got such thing as impermanent? Everything is so real, so like tangible. Like you can own them, you can have them. What is all this teaching about impermanent, all those things? Means ask you not to hold on to things, not to have things. They cannot understand. But to them, everything is like, especially when you are young and when you are successful at the prime of your career, you never believe you can die one day. You think life will be beautiful. All this is really, really beautiful until the first number truth reality hit. So to you, life is like a lot of reality, permanent, very tangible. And you will never look at spiritual teaching, religion, because life is too good. Then when you say the universal characteristic of suffering is dukkha, everything tends towards suffering, towards the end, even whatever enjoyment or happiness is a prelude to suffering. As long as you attach, cling and grasp, suffering will be the final result. Because even this physical body, it goes the way of nature. From birth, it will arise and you will have to go through the way of nature, getting old, getting sick and die. Finally, it will happen. And sickness, disease, injury is a reality. Aging is a reality. Death is a certainty. So all this you can see. So the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta, non-self, especially non-self, most people cannot believe. You say, what you mean? This is not me. Then who am I? Then why you have a name, I have a name? Why everything has identity? So to them, it's very real. This is me, definitely it's me. How can it not be me? Whatever I want to do, I can do. I want to run, I want to laugh, I want to jump, I want to even commit suicide, I can do. Why you say not me? This is me. I can do what I want. But when you don't have the ability to meditate, to realize that truth, you will believe. Because this is mundane reality, mundane thinking. The conditioned mind, the mundane mind, will perceive this as very real. Just because you're Buddhist, you are exposed to the three universal characteristics. People ask you, hey, is this you? Oh no, not me, anatta. But do you really understand what anatta is? Ananda may not understand anatta, but Ananda is not what he thinks he is. So the anatta is very deep in its meaning. But anatta doesn't mean Ananda doesn't exist. Ananda exists, but it's not him. Then you will feel funny, you know. From am I exist, not me. Then who the hell am I? What am I? Who am I? That's why the green book is very beautiful. So this karmically conditioned for my mind, the vehicle and the tool, the so-called human being or the living being for us to come, is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon. Go the way of nature, follow the universal character. That's why the Buddha say it's delusion if you grasp onto it, cling onto it and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore all this can be mine. So this understanding is very profound. Unless you can have this understanding, you cannot penetrate. That's why I want to explain why the opposite of conventional truth is the reality. The reality is always not what living beings perceive. Living beings always perceive through delusion. And they take the other opposite extreme. That's why the duality is the one that can delude them and condition their misery and suffering. So whatever that is impermanent brings about suffering, empty and non-self, they grasp and cling and hold, think that it is permanent, it is beautiful, and it is real. It can even have that foolish idea of looking for Changsheng Pulau. In English, you call it longevity. Immortality, yeah. The right word is immortality. So the emperor of China was told many of them look for immortality. But the form goes the way of nature. Nothing can live forever except that nature within. So all within the conditioned world is subject to the universal characteristics of nature, because it is a dependent originating world. Dependent on condition, phenomena arise. So whatever that arises from the conditioned world is definitely impermanent. You attach and cling, one thing's your way, you suffer. It's a very obvious thing. But to the non-cultivator, it's not obvious. To him, it's, I don't know what the hell are you trying to tell me. I think something wrong with you. You think too much. So human beings can never fathom this type of understanding. Yeah, they don't have the awareness nature. They don't have the insight. They don't have the ability to really penetrate the truth, to have this understanding. So, okay, we go back to the notes. Where are we? Did I move a bit or not? Oh, okay, about spiritual cultivation. Huh? Okay, so spiritual cultivation takes time. Oh, I just explained this sentence earlier. And therefore, time is our most precious resources. So now you understand why spiritual cultivation takes time. Even wisdom needs to be evolved. You can have moments of enlightenment, awakening, but the understanding of it, the stability of it, the progress, the transformation, that one is a long, long, long process. You have to go through it. Therefore, do not let time go to waste. Remain diligent, means persevere, and do not be indolent. Indolent means lazy. Laziness. Uphold the precepts and cultivate in accordance with the Dhamma, means follow the Dhamma way. Guide the precepts and rules to nurture wisdom life. This is very true. You cannot hold on to your precepts, and the essential Dhamma, the nature's truth, you will not be able to nurture wisdom life. Time waits for no one. This is very true. This is considering psychological time. Physical time also same. The Buddha's teaching. Time wait for no one. Oh, sorry. Only those who diligently cultivate themselves, uphold the precept, follow the Buddha's teaching, and live them out in their daily life, a daily cultivation, can develop the wisdom life. This is very true. You have to uphold the precepts. You have to follow the advice of the Buddha. Since we have formed an aspiration to engage in spiritual cultivation, we have to make good use of our time and be diligent. Reverently listen to the Dhamma. See, this is step two of Avijja Sutta. Diligently. Here they put the word reverently. Means with respect. You listen to the true Dhamma. Contemplate its meaning. So this is the second turning. That's why I say after you listen, you contemplate, you reflect, you inquire, and then put them into cultivation. The three stages of cultivation. Pariyati, Patipatti, then Pativeda. The three stages of cultivation, sorry. Then when it comes to the three turning, listening, reflection, contemplation, and finally, Bhavanamaya Panya, the wisdom born of the cultivation. So the three stages of wisdom evolution determine how you develop them through the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. When you turn the Four Noble Truths three times, you develop the corresponding wisdom. First turning corresponds to Suttamaya Panya, second turning to Chittamaya Panya, third turning to Bhavanamaya Panya. Because first turning is listening to the Sutta. Now there may be more. You can read about it. You not only listen, you can have Dhamma discussion, sharing, read books, even go to the internet, Google. Then a lot of these are first turning Suttamaya Panya. Last time, you have to listen. Well, there is no recording. There is no book, no language, no words, nothing. You have to listen. That's why it's called Sutta Maya Panya. Wisdom born of listening to the sutta or discourse of the Buddha. Then after that, you reflect and contemplate, inquire, stabilize all this understanding and assimilate them into your nature. That is second turning wisdom, Chintamaya Panya. Then after that, when you put it into practice, it's through mindfulness, the four foundation of mindfulness, you cultivate. Mindfulness in daily life, daily mindfulness. And cultivating the four foundation of mind. That's how it developed the third turning wisdom. Third turning is always about the meditative training. So the meditative training is called bhavana. That's why it's wisdom born of bhavana, the meditative training. So that is the third turning. Okay, so we covered most of it. Eh? Then I will read on. Then even if we are constantly listening to the teaching, we still will not learn anything from them. Now this one is very true. In learning the Dhamma, if we do not combine listening, contemplation and cultivation, then even if we are constantly listening to the teaching, you only listen, theory, no use. Well, you didn't contemplate, reflect and put it into cultivation. So this one is very important. This one is very true. Right? So if we are constantly listening to the teaching, then it's different. Because after that, you have to put it into practice, contemplation, reflection. Otherwise, you will not learn anything from them. So after listening to the Dhamma, we must carefully reflect on our life and ask ourselves whether we are following the precept at all times. Even when we are busy, we have to be constantly vigilant. We must not live out our life in ignorance and ideally waste away our time. So this one is just a reminder for cultivator. So vigilant means you are very attentive. So sometimes heedfulness, they also use this word to replace it, vigilant. When you are heedful, means you are vigilant, means you really, every moment, every instant, heedful or vigilant. You look after your precept. You make sure you don't violate your precept. You make sure you are on the cultivation path. You make sure you are following the Dhamma way. So this is what they call, you are heedful. You are constantly aware, ever mindful, constantly meditative. So vigilant has the same meaning as heedfulness. Life becomes shorter with each passing day. This is very obvious, eh? With each year that passes, we have one fewer year to live. So we must ask ourselves, is our wisdom life increasing? I think this word is quite interesting, wisdom life. Do you really live a life of wisdom? Or you live a life of heedlessness? The wisdom way of living is heedful, following the Dhamma way. So whenever you are heedless, you are as if dead. That's why you don't have the wisdom life. You lead a life of heedlessness. You wasted your life. So this part is, I think, beautiful. So we read on this part. So we must ask ourselves, is our wisdom life increasing? By being just a little more diligent, our wisdom life will certainly grow a little bit more. If we are indolent, means lazy and idly, how to pronounce this word, let time passes by, then not only is the time we have left in this life decreasing, but by not realizing the Buddha Dhamma, our actions, speech and thought will be chaotic, means heedless living, causing us to accumulate what? Negative karma, born of ignorance. So this is very true. So when you read through this, if you are a cultivator, you should really seriously wake up before you are continuously trapped in that intolerance. There's a lot of people always say, "Aiyah, not now lah, I got time lah. Wait till I have more time, more free time. Wait till my kids grow up first." The married one will say that. Then after that, "Wait till I retire." Then the not married one say, "Aiyah, now career first." A lot of justification. But when it comes to cultivation, I realize the serious one never have problem. When I was young, when I was studying or what, when the time come to cultivate, my nature just move. And I don't need problem to go for Dhamma. The condition will arrive because of my vow. When I was young, I already look up onto the sky, the star. I don't even have any problem. Then I inquire, "Who am I? What am I? What am I doing here? I'm only one of the miserable beings, one of the billions of human beings on this planet. And there are so many planets. And the numbers of sun is more than the sand on the Ganges, like the Buddha said. Then what the hell am I doing here? I'm so insignificant in this entire existence. Then what the hell is going on? Who am I? What am I?" Then suddenly it's like, pop, the nature tell me, "You have to meditate to understand." Oh, that was the answer I need. Okay, I don't even know what is meditation. I just agree fully because I knew that was what I need to do. If I don't meditate, I cannot go beyond my thought, my thinking. What I think limits me. So I know there is a dimension that is beyond thought that I need to realize. That's why I agree. Then when I connect back, penetrate all this, then I realize why I was like that when I was young. So all this will happen. Okay, we go on. "By being just a little more diligent, our wisdom life will suddenly grow a little bit more." This one we have gone through. "If we are indolent and ideally let our time pass by, then not only is the time we have left in this life decreasing, but by not realizing the Buddha Dharma, our actions, speech and thought will be in chaos or chaotic, causing us to accumulate negativity of karma due to ignorance." This is very true. "Therefore, we need to always reflect on our thoughts and intention. How are we making use of our life? Are we progressing diligently in the right direction? Only in this way are we truly spiritual practitioners in a place of spiritual cultivation." So this one you really have to reflect off and on. Otherwise, you can deviate without you knowing. Sometimes through what? Complacency. You become complacent. You think you know the Dhamma. You think you have enough understanding. Actually, all those are Dhamma knowledge. And you have not changed. Most of the time, the cultivator, they don't know. They have not changed. To them, they may even have the beautiful thought, "Hey, maybe I sotapan already. Or sakadagami already. Or if I put in a bit more hard work, anagami got chance." Then, a lot of them believe they are arahant already. So all this depends how you create your fantasy. Because thought-based cultivation lead to a lot of this doubting, especially those who can perform psychic. They can levitate, or they thought they already make it. To them, it's special ability, like psychic ability, is a reflection of enlightenment. Because they are conditioned in that way. That's why they want to learn all those type of meditation. When they can see light, they can levitate, they think they are very special. But the teaching of the Buddha, the enlightenment that the Buddha talked about, is so different. It's about development of wisdom, nothing else. So that you are free from suffering. So that you don't have to suffer. It's not all your psychic ability or special ability. You are born supernormal, so what? Do you suffer? If you still suffer, means you don't understand life. You don't have the Dhamma, you don't have the wisdom. You cannot cope with life. So, to understand the true teaching, it is very straightforward. When you are sincere, have the faith, you just reflect and contemplate. What am I doing? That's why the Sampajana will keep you on the path. Clear comprehension. You don't have the clear comprehension, you will deviate. And then the advice of the Buddha is very clear. Then his teaching, Noble Eightfold Path, is very clear. You don't have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path, you are not the enlightened being that the Buddha talked about. Where his meditation is Noble Eightfold Path. If you develop the understanding of this Noble Eightfold Path, have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factor, and then you are an Arya, you are enlightened being. But you don't even have any of this Noble Eightfold Path factor, and you think you are enlightened. Yeah, so I wish you all the best. And you choose to be so gullible. You want to fantasize, you can fantasize. But the truth is the truth. Okay, we read on. I think after this we can maybe have a toilet break. Yeah? As previously mentioned, spiritual practitioner must be able to give up all that is hard to give up. This one we have gone through. What is most important is to give up the affliction in our heart. That one, a lot of people didn't realize. This thought is very difficult to give up your wealth, your relationship, your whatever title. But actually, they never really reflect within. Your affliction, your suffering, your fear, your delusion. That one is the one that you have to root out. That one, without wisdom, you cannot root out. It's not a question of give up. They use the word give up. You cannot give up one no. I don't want to get angry. I don't want to have affliction. You don't want, but without wisdom, you will get yourself entangled. Understand? So, it's not like you already own this thing, you want to give it up. Understand? Your anger is a defilement, born of delusion. Your affliction is a defilement, born of delusion. So how can you, like materialistic, I give it up. Then I no more suffering. So easy, no need to cultivate anything. So when it comes to cultivation, it's not giving up. So here he's trying to give an analogy. What is most important is to give up your affliction, means to really root out your ignorance, your delusion. To develop wisdom, you should change it. Otherwise, the affliction cannot go on. The teaching expounded by the Buddha can be applied by every Buddhist disciple, lay or monastic. Very true. We can uphold and cultivate them anywhere, anytime. But have we etched the teaching in our heart or mind? And that one very important. So that we are able to apply them in our life. You know what is etched or not? It's like very stable already. Etched inside there already. But of course, you do it physically, no use. Means that teaching becomes so clear, so stable, until it's part of you. Can never be a part of you. That's why the wisdom is like that one. You can never lose it. When you awaken to it, when you have to understand it, it's with your nature. You can never lose it. You don't have to put on the memory there and remember. No. Oh, this one I must remember. Oh. This is anicca dukkha anatta, this is a theory and all that. Like all the essential Dhamma. You go and commit to memory, no use. The understanding part, the moment you understand is yonisop manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense. So this wisdom, like now Qin Hao also know, it will manifest at the moment of sense. If it cannot manifest at the moment of sense experience, you cannot deal with life. Means every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process. Straight away, that Dhamma that you have contemplated, reflected, and the understanding will surface. Then you will know how to deal. Rupang anicchang, rupang anatta. You straight away, no longer deluded. Yeah. Then sometimes all the important sayings that I share with you all is also a very powerful Dhamma. Like I always say what I developed to after hearing from some of my teachers, especially Achayantra, it's only mighty nature rolling by. Understand? Come and go, no reality. Everything is just the way it is. It's only another way of putting it. Then like the Buddha say, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions. And that itself is so much wisdom, you know, so profound. Means whatever that happened, that is the reality. You cannot change. Well, the causes and conditions are re-established. That's why you have to be at peace. You can never do it your way. One thing's your way, react to it and become miserable. A human being's problem is they cannot accept what happened. They always want to think, then comment, then complain. Why these people like that? If they don't do this, I will be very happy. I will be very peaceful. All the if. If is never the reality, that's why the world is the world. That is the way it is. Condition like that, things will like that. Why can't you understand all this? That's why I see things as they are. Ability to realize this profound, yet rather direct, simple wisdom can actually help you to actually pull away from that delusion. Well, when you see something, recall through memory or whatever, or your phobia, your fear, then straight away the Dhamma will arise. Sabbe sankara anicchang, sabbe sankara dukkang. Means all these are sankara activity. It's impermanent. It come and it go. If you continue to give meaning, hold on to it, suffering is the result. That's why sabbe sankara dukkang. Then finally, sabbe dhamma anatta, no reality. He know you, he know me. So when you have reflected and contemplated deep enough, whatever happened in life, this one will prompt you. Sabbe sankara anicchang, sabbe sankara dukkang. And you don't even want to think. You're wasting time. Understand? Then later on you realize sabbe dhamma anatta. He know you, he know me, empty. Then I go and zeng for what? Fight for what? Compete for what? Argue for what? Wanting to be right for what? Understand? Especially the last part, sabbe dhamma anatta. I always use the word anattito. Very nice. Ajahn Buddhadasa used that word anattito. It's actually anatta. Anatta means non-self, not you. He know you, he know me. They're empty. Because it's impermanent, it's non-self, it's empty. Towards the end, whether whatever happened, it's just within that moment, within that moment, within that moment, it's gone. Dead and gone, dead and gone. As real as can be, is the present moment. When it arises, it is not stable. Immediately it ceases. Then the next moment arises. And that is the only reality, you know, highest in line. You know. But then, each and every of these moments arise and pass away, then you still deludedly believe there is continuity. You give meaning. That's why you recall through memory, you were born, you were so and so. Then who raised you, your parents, then how you become successful, who you marry, who your children. Then you entangle all this. Understand? It's actually a chain of thinking, thought process. The way you perceive you as very real. That so-called form of mind. That's why I like the Mandarin song, Wang Si Zi Neng Hui Wei. That was very beautiful. You can only recall through memory whatever that has happened. Because we cannot deny that we were born into this world and we have gone through life until now. Maybe for my age is 67 years. I cannot deny that I existed. there is some form of reality. But when I ask myself this question, is it real? Is my life real? I cannot deny I was born, you know, experience all that. But anything tangible or not? Anything real? Nothing, isn't it? This moment is this moment already. All those things is dead and gone. You understand? No? As real it can be, it's only within the moment when it happened. If nobody remember, nobody recollect, your whole identity is gone. Do you understand? Even this brother Tio, maybe it will last in more people's memory. Well, Kayamita will remember me until all the Kayamita gone. Then nobody has the memory of who brother Tio is. Maybe internet will keep. You go and search the new generation. Hey, who is this brother Tio? Who is this bro? They go to the website. Oh, he got this website. Who the hell is he? Nobody knows you. But those who interact with me, they will know. So what you understand is different. That's why each and every one of us, when we have the affinity, when we are there, we experience different things. That's why during the time of the Buddha, those who appear, they experience very differently. You cannot understand what they experience, but also too extreme. Those deluded ones met the Buddha also kao lat to you. Kena upside down. Yeah, they don't believe. Some go and challenge the Buddha. Some go and badmouth him and put word into him. The Chincha incident, all those things, remember? A lot of these people. And for you to do this to a Sammasambuddha, I cannot imagine the coming. I tell you, it's terrible. Really terrible. But these people there to do. And you look at Devadatta, the cousin for so many lives with the Buddha, and yet fall into delusion because of what? The ego, the delusion. Ego and develop all the psychic. Then he used it to manipulate the Sangha and cause Sikhism within the Sangha. And finally, he get into trouble. He tried to kill the Buddha, but not successful. But he end up harming the Buddha. That's why he is miserable there. But the Buddha still predict in the distant future, he will still become a Pachika Buddha. So a lot of these things you can't understand. Where they have their mixture of affinity. Sometimes very holy, very sincere. Sometimes deluded like me. So you don't think that you are close to great being. You stand a good chance. Sometimes the opposite can happen. That's why the Buddha said, avoid all evil if you can. Almost 10 o'clock already. Okay, we have toilet break. We stop here. Where are we? I didn't finish this one. Oh, okay, I finished this sentence, then we end. Are we able to subdue our own affliction? Yes. So this one is very important. In fact, this whole paragraph is very good. Are we able to subdue our own affliction and practice or cultivate the Buddha's teaching to teach others by example? Very good. As we live in the world, no matter where we go, if we can always contemplate and reflect on ourselves, then can we engage in spiritual practice anywhere and everywhere? If we can keep the Buddha Dharma of teachings in our heart, and then our own mind become our spiritual training ground. This is what you should do. If you have the teaching ash in your heart, it has become a part of your nature, then your mind will become your spiritual training ground. That is where you cultivate. You cultivate with the true mind to observe clearly what the mundane mind do, to observe clearly who are you, what are you, so that you understand what is going on. It is true unfolding the secret of the mundane mind that you learn and you awaken. Means self-knowledge. That is the true cultivation. Without that silent mind, the true awareness nature to observe, to see and to awaken, you cannot learn. That's why thought-based meditation can only give rise to knowledge. You cannot learn. The real learning is through observation. Silent the awareness. That's why without that true mind, you cannot start. Xin wei gen ben. That's how you start your cultivation. Starting from mind. Understand that you have two mind. One is the mundane mind, which is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon, that has the universal characteristic that pertains to the existential world. The other one is the true mind, the unconditioned mind, that nature which is beyond thought, beyond mind, the unconditioned Dhamma. So that one you have to realize. Then from there, use it to cultivate, to observe, to awaken. Then only the cultivation become perfect.
Okay, we will now open up for Q&A and reporting of meditation.
Namo Buddhaya.
Yeah,
thank you, Sadisha, for nominating me. It's been quite some time I'm not attending relative classes. Since they asked for apologies from everyone. Basically, I was a little bit busy with my worldly activities, and now I'm back. Hopefully, more grounded at this moment of time. I'd like to thank on behalf of our local Buddhist Center for Sister Alicia and Brother Teo to donate or to give us Buddha Rupa of Tisamang Pusa. We have yet put at the altar, but soon we have a Mahayana Sifu will come and
chant.
As for my practice, of late, I encounter some very difficult, certain, I believe, karmic obstruction.
They
have taken me aback. Today, when relatives mentioned about the giving up, only that struck me a lot. It's not like we own something, we give up. That really gave me some light, you know. Don't just say, I want to give up, I just give up. But you must unroot that thing.
Root out.
Root out.
With the understanding.
So with that, I felt much lighter in my chest area. Thank you so much.
You got any question?
At this moment, I'd like to rejoice with my feeling of certain lightness.
That would be very useful. You want to share the coming obstacle?
I'd like to apologize, but just
no problem.
Before MCO, there's this our Kaya Mitra brought me and Ananda to see this fortune teller in Klang. Mr. Shan, was selling the seeing from the birth chart from the the Indian astrologer. Last year I will meet somebody that I owe that will come back to me. Then met the person, and that's where I was very, very down. I mean, very hard. I know I owe the person, and he comes back to with an intention. A cultivator, I tried to tell him what is to say, the practice, but bringing him to a local, but he just like a porcupine, just attacked back. He admitted that. Why is this like, I don't know, I came around, I went to all many kilometers, why is this like, I also got lost, because he has a stand of, zuzhuo is better, zuzhuo, he start in a way like I think a person when you're so strong in yourself, it reminds me that I also do have zuzhuo in me. So one way or another, it reminds me, and today, just now in the evening, he just sent me the person sent me a message saying that he realized that he apologized for what they've done, and he said, I realized the friendship that we want to build up, because he was my patient. The friendship that I want to guide him to Dhamma, he just felt it's not the time
for him.
I find that the journey of that last 3 months was basically a test for me. For my cultivation, that how much trust I have in the Bodhidharma.
Yes.
And really, as I said, that's not the giving up. It's like, I thought I have given up. It's not been me, but I have not unrooted.
Destroyed
me.
Yeah, because the wisdom is not there. To actually do. It's very common. Don't have to worry. You go to life, as you go through the cultivation, you will meet with many of these situations where sometimes, especially cultivators who are too eager to help people or to share. I still remember there are a lot of cultivators who don't really understand the Dhamma, but they thought they are ready. They thought they want to help people, they want to share. So what happened was, they start doing all this. Then they didn't realize where they can't see. After a few incidents, it's actually a test for him to wake up. Not wake up in the enlightened sense. Wake up means to wake up to the fact that you are not ready. He ended up himself getting angry, want to challenge you for arguing, all those things. Then, what are you trying to teach? What are you trying to share? Hey, you yourself have not developed the understanding. That's why it's not easy to come out to share. Even before I come out to share, a lot of people caution me and warn me. Because you will meet with a lot of this type of people. Then even recently when they saw all this video, short video, all those things coming out, one of the Kayamita asked me, Brother, pardon me for asking, so far you got any problem, anybody come up to you? I said, touch wood, so far so good, nobody, but good comment got a lot. So the way you handle things is very important. Yes, when you are not ready, a lot of things can backfire. Because I still remember during the very early days, 2004, when Yun Chan invited me to come out to share. So at that time, the topic was simple, very general topic, tsunami. So I able to galvanize them and all those things. Then I share. So it become pretty interesting. Because I bring out the Buddhist teaching, the spiritual law, and the physical law, then how they create condition for the tsunami and all things. Then later on, Yun Chan said, Brother, why not we go into the teaching? Another general discussion. I said, okay, I'll go into the teaching. Oh, that is where the problem starts. Go into the teaching. My teaching is not the conventional one. Opposite of what people learn and people do. So when I started sharing, I realized they were not ready. They were not ready. And they cannot understand what I share, so they tend to like have doubt and problem. Because when I share the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, nobody understand. The five year form and mind, hardly anybody understand. So during that time, it was not easy. But for me, I was lucky. I didn't want to argue with them or say anything. So I just share whatever I share, with, I qualify my three conditions. Luckily, I did that. I said, first condition is, there is no authority, means I'm not your teacher. It's a Dhamma discussion. We share Dhamma, understand? That one toned down the thing a lot. Second condition is, no right, no wrong. I respect you for what you are, your cultivation, your understanding. Similarly, I hope you respect me. So, no need to say right or wrong. I am just the way I am. I share my understanding. You share your understanding. So, third condition is, we make use of whatever that is useful to cultivate, to progress. Then we rejoice together. That's it. Well, luckily, I put in that three. Then, because of that, they actually patiently endure what I share. All the tapali, whatever. Then finally, I think there were a few Kayamitas. They they really invite me out as usual for lunch, for dinner. Then sometimes teh tarik. Last time a lot of teh tarik. Last time I like to go for after class, go to mama or whatever teh tarik. We go and yum kopi or yum cha. Then I remember there is this brother Wong. He said, "Brother Tiu, to tell you the truth, last time, he said, Bun Chai, he was very close to Bun Chai. He said, when Bun Chai told me, your talk was very good, asked me to go and listen. The first time I went there, I feel like walking out." You know what he told me? He said, "You try to teach us four noble truths, no? Kindergarten style, no? Sunday school one, no? He think it's Sunday school one, no? At first, I thought, four noble truths, what is there to teach? Kindergarten, Sunday school children also understand. But after he attended 3 months, he realized the teaching was so profound, the tree turning, he cannot understand. Then how I explain the application part of the first noble truth, then only he start to tell me, I have never heard of this four noble truth taught in this way before. You see? Then they start to see how the linkage to the three type of wisdom and all those things. At first, the tree turning, I remember the first few sessions, everybody was shaking their head. They cannot follow. It was so new. Sutamaya panya, cintamaya panya. Then, bhavanamaya panya, lagi kaulat. No, cannot. Then later on, as I reflect and contemplate, I realize actually it's not easy to share because people are just the way they are. When they are not ready, they cannot understand. They will have this reaction. That's why I was lucky because I knew if I come out and I don't have all this thing ready, qualification, the three conditions, I will get myself into a lot of problem. Then I keep on reminding them, no, never quote me. Never say Brother Teo say this, Brother Teo say that. Brother Teo's teaching is like that. Forget about it. I say, if you appreciate my teaching, you can rejoice. Then if they want to learn, ask them to attend. That's it. So Brother Teo share with us some essential Dhamma teaching, which are very unique, very different. It has changed my life. It make me different. And I benefited a lot. This one you can say, isn't it? But you don't go and quote Brother Teo say, thought-based meditation is not meditation. Well, they die. Then method, technique, never define. Nobody can understand and accept your sentence. No? It's very dangerous. Then you quote me, I get into trouble. No? Then people come and challenge me. How? Luckily, nobody challenge me. Nobody ever come. So for me, it's something that I anticipated, then I know how to deal. The dealing is, even if I meet with difficult people or what, I will go back to the three conditions. Remember, our sharing is based on this, no right, no wrong. So I respect you for your views, your opinion, for whatever you, the way you are. So likewise, similarly, at home, you respect what we do here. We are here to share, not to argue about right and wrong, not to create misunderstanding and all those things. But all this will lead to more conflict, negativity and misunderstanding. That is not the intent. The intent is to share and to move as Kayanamitas, because we are all Dhamma friends. There is no authority. So a lot of these things actually help. So for your case, I think I know what you are going through, which is actually very normal, Jayanta. Because you are a doctor and you know a lot of things about healing. That sometimes you see people whom you think you have affinity and you want to help them turn around. You know, a lot of people don't know the teaching. But my advice is don't be too eager to teach or share or to even change a person's behavior or whatever. Because when they are not ready, when they don't want to be helped, there is nothing you can do. Then this is to let you see. Like you say, like a porcupine, but you wear. It's very common. They will even argue with you and tell you all. So, no point. That's why I never do that. Even my own parent last time, my father, when I go back there, I try to help resolve some misunderstanding between my eldest brother and him. I also judge the situation. When there is condition to speak, I speak. But after that, if the word doesn't go in, well, I know my father very well. Until my son, the time my son was very young, he said, "Daddy, there is no condition, no need to talk to Coco." Then I saw, I said, "Okay, okay, I know what you mean." I said, "My nature rejoices in my son. But I have to talk to my father, understand? Yeah, he was my father." So I didn't insist. I just told him very simple thing. I said, "Maybe you may not believe what I try to share with you, because this is based on the Buddhist teaching." I say, his fear is, he's scared I become monk. That is the fear. So because of that, my father refused to listen to what I say. Well, he saw that trend. A lot of people say, "If you're not careful, your son will become monk." Well, I know the Dhamma too deep, too strongly, and I meditate a lot, and he know. Then, for many years, he resists. Whenever I want to speak about it, he says, "Stop, I don't want to listen. It's okay. I just let things be." Then when he get into entanglement with my elder brother, I try to explain to him. I said, "Last time, my grandmother, which is his mother, he was the eldest son. My grandmother did some mistake, of course, involving my mother. So he hate my grandmother, which was his mother, understand? And he's the eldest son. Then because of that, they never talk for 20 years. You know, my father is like that one. Because that time in China, the tradition is his authority is with my grandmother. So he cannot do anything. He cannot even protect his own wife. But my mother, of course, get mistreated and all things. But finally resolved. It chased my mother out of the house, my grandmother. But somebody come and tell my grandmother and bring my mother back. Then my father never forgive my grandmother after that day on. Then when my grandmother was quite elderly, just okay, he told me, he said, "Why must I suffer like that? I have a son who never talked to me for 20 years. I told her this is coming. Then when I saw what happened to my elder brother also the eldest of my father, through some misunderstanding also involving my mother, they developed that like refused to come and visit my elder brother. My elder brother also refused to visit you, and they never talked for 1 year already. So I went back finally. I told my father, "You know what is coming or not? What you did to grandma, you didn't know. Now I tell you what I heard from her. Do you want to end up like that with your elder son? Because of misunderstanding." I said, "You are the papa. Tai liao ti," I understand. So finally, luckily, I talked to him. Then I talked to my elder brother. I said, "Father and son, they got overnight, what? Kak ye sao ah. Kak ye sao is what? Sao, vengeance ah. Overnight resentment. I said, "There is no such thing. It's a misunderstanding. So one of you just apologize, understand now, and say, maybe it was my fault. I shouldn't have done that. But for my father to do that, he will never do it." Then I told my father, "Okay, never mind. You don't do anything. I will talk to elder brother. I will bring about a condition so that he will come over, he will bring things over, then we have our dinner. Then you like forget about all these things, then go back to normal." So that's what I told my elder brother. My elder brother said, "You sure or not? You every time go back and firing." So my father would tell him all and chase him out of the shop and the house. So luckily that case, I said, "Sure already. I already like negotiated." Okay. Resolve. Yeah. That's why finally, after that thing resolved, you know what my father did? You know? I was very surprised, you know, that Chinese New Year, after resolving the thing, I go back to Alasta. He suddenly called me, you know, he said, come, he said, I got something for you. He never give me anything. Suddenly he bring out one big calendar. Oh, I thought maybe every year, because he, Chinese Institute of Medical Shop, got a lot of calendar. But this is a very nice one, very big one. I was so surprised, you know, I rejoiced. You know what was that calendar? You know? If a Samasambuddha with the radiant light shining on the main patient. When I saw that I knew condition is there to talk to him. That's why after that I spoke to him. After that he not scared I become monk already. He knew I can resolve issue. Well, I resolved a lot of my family issue and there was harmony. Then everyone, they respect me because they know I understand life and I understand the teaching. Then he said, I got nothing for you. He said, you already financially, you don't need me. He said, you know, he told me, but this is for my heart. He said, so when he gave me the calendar with the Buddha there, I knew already. I said, thank you so much. So I really rejoiced and I said, thank you. Then I talked to him. That's why you must wait for condition. When people are ready, then you will know. So when people are not ready, don't be too eager to help or share or whatever. So this is part and parcel of life. You will go through. Sometimes for your case is where you are not married, not so bad. There are other people who are married, they cannot count in their children, they become very angry. And that's all. Because they want to train their children, they want to educate their children, they want to bring up their children. So, but the children rebel. That's all. So, like yeah, this case is your patient rebel and like occupied by you. But if your own children do this to you, how you take it? I tell you, it's not easy. So life sometimes is not easy. Sometimes in-laws, sometimes parents, sometimes brother, sister, misunderstanding, all those things. A lot of things in life, you will witness, you will go through, and you will learn. Well, this is Dhamma. So attachment is delusion. When you attach, give meaning, grasp and cling, it becomes suffering. So suffering arises through what? Like he realized, you think you let go, forget about it, give it up. How can you give out ignorance? Ignorance needs wisdom to root out. So if it's not root out, it will come back to memory. It will stir your mind again. Then whenever you see him, you will recall the incident. Then next time when you want to help others, you also think twice. Maybe he's like this fellow. I think I better don't kepo. But Dhamma is not like that, understand? Dhamma is when you have the understanding, you will know the condition. When condition is there, you manifest. When there is no condition, just let things be. Yeah, the world is the world, no reality. He know you, he know me. Not what you think, understand? Sometimes this is not help. We think we help. But when you really understand, what are you doing? That word help has a lot of meaning. When there is no condition to help, please understand. Otherwise you get into trouble. Then when people do not want your help, also you have to understand. You have to have the ability to feel and sense it. Then straight away avoid, stop. Oh, it's okay, never mind. Sorry for bringing this up. Maybe you are not ready yet. It's not your time yet. If this is something you don't like, it's okay, no problem. Like he tried to apologize to you and write to you and say, so you say no problem. You know, then maybe you can make him feel better. Say, it's also my fault because I was thinking you are ready to listen. Because this teaching has helped me a lot. But since I know that it's not the time for you because you are not ready for all this thing. Maybe some other time. And then it becomes different. Then later on they get themselves into trouble. They will remember your words. I remember Jayanta told me, if I get into this trouble again, I can talk to him or I can maybe discuss with him. So sometimes I do give them a way to come back to me. Like my youngest brother, I told him, if you don't go and do all this nonsense, you toe the line, respect my parents, which is also his parent, then if you have problem with life, or when you have some form of savings, you come and see me. I will help you. I will help you to invest and grow your money. And he remembered that. And he came to me, you know, and he became very successful after that. So all this is Dhamma. So we should rejoice with Jayanta's good sharing and condition, so that we all can maybe learn from it, and through my sharing, maybe more and more people can understand. So this is also a very good topic today on, because if you don't bring it up, we don't know what you go through, like Jayanta's case. Now, after bringing up, we share, then we give more example. Then he developed the understanding, and the other Kayamita can learn from all this. Then hopefully other Kayamita also bring out your whatever life encounter and share. Because without sharing, we cannot learn. We cannot discuss the topic. And my nature cannot actually let the Dhamma come out. Because Dhamma sharing needs condition. When there is no condition, nothing manifests. So hopefully with this, more and more Kayamita will be willing to share more and more. So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu.
Well, actually, recently, I see how when you say when there is no condition, nothing will happen.
Just let things be.
I really see that because one of a very close relative, child fall very sick.
Trying
to help, but when there's no condition, keep to their view.
Don't interfere. Whether,
from whatever direction we are trying,
no use.
We cannot change their view.
You know why or not? Because of karmic obstruction.
Yeah.
Been obstructed by that karmic force, so nothing can go through. That's why I say you don't ask for forgiveness. That karmic obstruction is there. They cannot receive help. They can't. I told Sri Ang many times.
They cannot, but even they are with the right people, the right Dhamma in front of them, also they
no use
the
one.
Right thing, you know.
Because of their karmic obstruction, they cannot receive one. Their karmic obstruction will obstruct them one. They cannot even listen.
They really cannot, you cannot.
Yes.
No way that.
Correct. That's why you must understand nature's law is such, without condition, it cannot. Because sometimes the karmic obstruction is still there. If you don't ask for forgiveness to break away that karmic obstruction, there is no way they can be helped or can even be approached. No way. Just like last time, one of the Kayamita, the daughter-in-law, and you remember, no? Same. Well, I told her, you cannot talk to her direct. Well, the karmic obstruction is so strong. They can't even listen. They are already so chronic. See psychiatry, everything. And the life is already like suicidal thought, depressed, and very, very severe. So, can't even approach. When they come near, they panic. They react and all those things. Can't do anything. Until the son told her, you better go back. It will be worse. Then I teach her. I said, if you really close to the victim or there is relationship, then it can be done. On her behalf, ask for forgiveness. After a while, she go back. Oh, resolve. One by one, resolve. Slowly, resolve. She also don't believe. So amazing. In fact, the son was a pastor. Also cannot count it. Until the mother did it for him. So a lot of things people cannot understand. Then he told me, he said, wow, brother, thank you so much. He said, you never believe all these things, is it? She used this word now. God's miracle also don't work that way. This is even more fantastic than God's miracle. It, to her, it's really a miracle. From an impossible state, it turned around and recovered. And because she was so scared of losing her son because of what happened to the daughter-in-law. Because the son wanted to marry her, very funny. So a lot of these things you must understand. That's why when I teach her what to do, the thing really works. That's why I understand it's karmic obstruction. There is no way you can do if it's a karmic obstruction. You have to break that first. But if it's not related to you, then no problem. There is nothing much you can do. You cannot on his behalf and want to do, because there is no relationship. The law of karma recognizes relationship. So it's now you the, understand, huh? Sadhu. You continue, Pastor, yes.
I can see that now the problem is life threatening already. And in Hokkien we say so thick chick.
So
it was so like we can see the problem, but they is like there is a veil, just them from
that's why we call it obstruction. Obstruction that prevent them from receiving any help. They can't. The karmic obstruction will obstruct. You can't even approach. And they will react and resist because of whatever coming. It becomes
worse. Then you can see that there are many people want to come in and help.
No use one. Cannot.
No use. They didn't show the people didn't show them the scientific way
the correct approach.
Sort the big, and they just follow like that. I don't know how to express.
Yeah, it's very simple. I give you this example that you will know. Pamasri, you listen. Last time there was one lady who was the HR head, I think, of a listed company. Very high position. Then she developed stress, and without her knowing, she developed breast cancer. Then she don't know what was it until you did a test biopsy, confirm breast cancer, third stage or going nearly final stage. So she don't know what this was all about. She panicked and she developed a lot of fear, phobia and all things. So admitted to hospital. And you know, when she was at the hospital, she just make that decision. He said, okay, operate, without finding out anything more about the disease or why. He just couldn't care less. He said, operate. But then her condition was so bad. She got phobia, hysteria, she panicked, and she see vision, like she see ghosts. Then she shrieked, until the whole hospital scared of her. The nurse also scared of her. The doctor also scared of her. Then the husband came. Then the doctor said, you better bring your wife back. The husband said, why? He said, nobody can handle her. She's freaking all over. Then the husband talked to her. She also panicked. And tell the husband, tell the husband, at the back of you got that ghost and all those things. Then the window also got, ceiling also got. The husband don't believe. The husband thought, like the doctor say, maybe she hallucinate. Then he got no choice. The husband took her back. He said that doctor say, wait till weekend. Then if she's more calm, more stable, then maybe we'll decide whether to operate on her or not. So when then likely, her very good friend, close friend, was one of the Kayamita that learned meditation under me. So he approached me straight away. The breath, can you help? I said, you better make sure she wants to be helped. Otherwise, don't call me. She went and asked her. Yes, they were very good friends. She trusted her. Yeah. He told her, my this teacher meditation teacher is a very good teacher. He knows the Dhamma, he can help you. He has helped a lot of depression people. Oh, you talk to her, and he agreed. You know. So she called me. I said, okay. So that night, I think Wednesday, 9 o'clock, we go to the house. I tell you, they got two dogs in the house. When we approach the house, these two dogs was howling before we even approached. Like sea ghosts like that, howling. Then when I went in, I can sense really. She was with that intense fear and phobia and the comic thing all behind. She dare not even look at me. But because the friend. So we went in. So I went in, then my friend said, Pratir, you can sit there. So I said, then I heard her asking my Dhamma friend about me, you know, what I do and all those things. Then I knew already. I said, I called my Dhamma friend. I said, Kim, don't worry. Never mind, it's okay. I said, tell her to relax. Don't panic. I said, I'm here to help. Just sit down. Let her settle down. Then I told her, I said, I heard about your condition from Kim, but I don't know what actually happened. I want to listen from you. You don't mind. I said, if I were to ask you what happened. Well, luckily I say that. Yeah, the way I say it, calm her down. Yeah, for once, there is somebody willing to listen to her. Then at first she hesitated. He said, my problem actually start with this breast cancer and all the things. Then he said, when I was at the hospital, oh, I said, don't worry, this is very common, I heard before. I said, you are not hallucinating. What? Hallucinating. This is very normal. I said. You really see them. I said. They are there. But don't worry. He starts to have confidence. Yes? He's like, she is not hallucinating. Means she will see out. Then he said, then what is all this? I said, I will explain to you later. Then I say, are you a Buddhist? He said, not really. He said, I follow my mother to temple. But once a year Buddhist. Vesakdev when you visit. I said, don't worry. I said, rather easier to talk to you. I say, as a Buddhist, you know, there is this thing as karma. Law of karma. You require your soul. So I said, I can advise you how all these things come about. Then through this understanding, I will give you some advice. You decide yourself. If you think it helps, you can do it. Then you will recover. Then I said, what happened to you is, you have this karmic thing behind. So, like cancer, all this is because too much killing and all those things. Then your work condition must be very stressful. Straight away he told me, oh yeah, he said, I'm a HR head, listed company, and I have my MDL. Every time the MD call me, either through the secretary or the direct line, she has cold sweat, fear, panic. She was in that stressful condition for the last 5 years now. That's why I developed cancer. So I say, yeah, it's stress and all that. I say, you don't worry. I say, if you don't know how to, like, understand your condition and reverse it, there is no way you can come out of it. You become worse. Because that fear will intensify. Then this disease thing, because of your DNA coding from the karmic past, it will create condition for it to worsen. That's why it deteriorates until now. So what you need is to develop metta, I say, loving kindness. Radiate love and metta to your own self. May I, this body and mind of mine be well. And feel the well-being and happy. Otherwise, this fear will grip you, will condition your karmic negativity and cause you a lot of suffering and misery. Then he starts to like see the light, that there is a solution. He said, wait. He said, you are Brother Theo. He said, you wait. You go and get an exercise book. He start to write down what I teach her. Then after that, he said, another thing I want to share with you is that what I saw in all those things, one, it's not hallucination, is it? I say, yeah, it's not hallucination. He said, wait, I call my husband down. He called the husband down and want the husband to listen now. So I have to explain. But I cannot tell her the actual reason. Because when you have this thing, when you are about to die, your consciousness actually will deteriorate until you are like that beta rhyme. That vibration can see them. Because you are about to die, actually. But I cannot say that. I say that it panic like it throw. Oh. So I told the husband, I said, there are a lot of people, when they are very sick, I use the right word lah. Because I never lie. I said, when they are very sick, they tend to have this vibration in their body that allow them to see this thing. But I can't say when you have that vibration, which means you are also that rhyme already. Actually, if I have not gone there within 3 days or 5 days, she'll be gone, I tell you. But because I explained, she finally become very happy. So this is not hallucinating. Yeah, it's not. It's normal to see them. But they will only be there when you have fear. I said, you shoot them also no use one. You know what she told me or not? She said, I saw one in front of me telling me, you will die within the next 3 days. Your children will wear the black one. He said, don't hang on. Then the one on the ceiling one say, I don't think you were 3 days. Maybe 2 days. Then another at the window one. But nobody see you. She panicked until she threw them away. She got two beautiful daughters, age 10 and 8 only. That. And the husband also, in the peak of their career, say something, say that. So what happened was, after she told me on it, I said, you don't worry, this is normal. You can see, but you must understand what you're going through. I said, this is the phobia and the fear and the comic thing, all the thing. So you need to develop this type of metta. Then after you understand, I will teach you meditation, how to calm your mind down, how to settle down, how to develop the faith, confidence, how to root out all this fear and all those things. So she was full of confidence. Then I explained to her further. I said, law of karma is you have to ask for forgiveness first. Then I gave her the chanting book, all those things. So that time was a simpler version. We don't have this developed chanting book yet. That time was simple version. I said, you ask for forgiveness, then all this will help you break your karmic obstruction, all things. Then I said, you also will have to like become very firm in your understanding of what is going on. Then she shared with me one thing which I want to bring out was this. Pamasri, you listen. She told me one, when she was at the hospital, a lot of his colleague and friend and classmate and relative come and visit her. He said, madness are these people, say, make her worse. He cannot listen though. He said, the Christian come to my church, believe in God, or else. Then the Buddhist guy, chant Kuan Yin Pusa, chant Amitabha. He said, everybody tell me to go to their place and do all this, but nobody give me any solution. Nobody explain to me what is happening to me and how to turn it around. He said, you are the only one able to help me understand what is going on, and there is a way for me to turn around. And finally, when he start to calm down and write down all those things, you know what he asked my Dharma friend? He said, your brother Theo, he specialized in this one, help people. He said, no, he's a civil engineer. Huh? Civil engineer, security, yeah. That's why you really laugh. Then I said, you don't mind, I said, offer me a glass of water. Actually, I want to invoke our merits for her. Offer me a glass of water. How hot, Actually, it's to help her. But she also, because her condition was not easy, she has a maid on. She's quite wealthy. She financially, the husband and her is okay. Very well. So he asked the maid to bring. I said, okay, the maid bring, you offer. I said, Then I evoke power of marriage. Then you know what happened after that? After I explained a few more things, nearly almost 12 o'clock already, midnight. Then I went back. Then I realized the dog also don't howl already. Quiet down already. Then I told my Kayamita friend, I said, I think she will be okay. You know, next morning, what happened? This HR head called the Kayamita friend. He said, thank you so much, Kim. This is the first night I have a good sleep, is it? The insomnia and the phobia, he cannot sleep for so many days. Suicidal thought and all those things. Then later on, she recovered. She came to my meditation class, Champaka Deo, and she learned the meditation, she learned the understanding very. She survived for 1 year or so. Then later on, she told me, because later on, I think she became complacent. Then there was a relapse. She went back to work, or don't know what, I forgot. She went back and do certain things. Then there was a relapse. But during the relapse, she become very different. She said, Bratio, now I know. I no longer fear already. But even if it's time for me to go, I got no more fear. Then. The only thing you need to do is do what you have to do. Means, in Hokkien, we say, kau tai, yai kau tai. So he said, the two daughters, he get a very close friend to help look after. And tell the husband, you don't worry. Yeah. And she told me in her own words, is it? I know how to die already, present you. You don't worry. As far as coming is concerned, I have understood. I have taken care of. So different, no? And so calm, so confident. Yeah. But later on, I think after 2 years, the relapse, then she succumbed. Yeah. Because that time, I think the coming, the timing is there, he has to end it. So Pamasri, yeah, understand. People who simply give you idea, no solution on that one is what is happening to your dear friend. Because everybody will tell her what to do, but no solution on, understand. You come to my church, you believe in my God your problem will be gone then a lot of like salesmanship on. Then some say, hey, you chant Amitabha Buddha, you chant Kwansi, or you come to the temple, receive blessing. So all this is not going to work. Because that person, that victim, is in phobia, coming obstruction, everything. Nothing can go in on. You must give fearlessness, like what Tsuji say. Calm them down and let them understand what is going on. Before you have the ability, without karmic affinity, it cannot be done. Because there is karmic affinity through that Kayamita. He has the good friend and he very sincere. And out of that, what they call compassion and understanding, I say, okay, we go. Yeah, I told her, provided she wants to meet me, otherwise no point. And she asked, and she said yes. Then it turned out, he's from Alastair, my hometown. Finally, I came to know he's my classmate's sister. That's why everything falls into place. So during the funeral, I met the brother. Then only I realized, because the brother told me, he said, my sister told me, he said, she received a lot of help from you. She is very grateful towards you. And she would like, and she thanked you a lot. And that's why he came and talked to me, my pastor. I was very surprised. I said, I didn't know he was your sister. Yeah, he said, he was my sister. Yeah, I told him I was also from Alastair. Then he asked me, do you know so-and-so? He named the other brother's name. But the surname was familiar. Kong something. I said, I got one physics teacher this name. But actually, he's a younger brother. He's a younger brother. That Kong something, the teacher was the cousin, not the actual brother. So that's how small world, everything fall in the place. Pamasri, now you understand, huh?
Thank you, yeah.
Okay, we better.
Can I have 2 minutes, Bertil? Instruction.
Let Jayanta share something.
For the benefits
okay.
of all kind
Okay.
This continue a little bit from my story and what Bertil talked about coming obstruction.
Yeah.
Yes, so. When he came as a patient, I whatever I said, it was very
difficult to go through.
No, but as patient is okay. Oh. Then we build as friendship. I thought I also can be his karma meter, you know. Then only I found this karmic obstruction comes in where whatever I say just
cannot
comes back
in.
At me. Yes.
Cannot go in. Yeah.
Then after that, I felt like a lifeguard going to sea, saving somebody is drowning, pulling my leg, and I was also drowning.
Yeah.
And the last 3 months, I really, really was in terrible disaster.
Yeah.
Then I remember, brother, thank you, brother. Really, I remember one thing, very important thing that's asking for forgiveness. I think it's try second day of Chinese New Year. I was so down, so peche, like Sister Bernard was saying. I just call him up, met him, and then I cried. I said, sorry, I can't help you. I'm suffering. And that's when that happened, suddenly things become lighter.
Conversation
become better. And I believe it's true that asking forgiveness is very important.
Very important, very important.
Because we don't know what we have owed them in the past.
I
know the coming was so strong, but unable to help, and I'm like a lifeguard being pulled down. So trimming myself. I totally agree. Asking forgiveness is very important. Thank you,
Matthew. You have to try it out, Sadhu. So this is very good sharing, Sadhu.